Hey, good morning. We are still in the morning. Yes, good morning. My name is Niall. I'm an evangelist. They call me an evangelist. I've no idea what that is. My sister-in-law asked me the other day, what do I do for Microsoft? So my family still don't know what I do. I still don't know what I do. It's all a bit of a mess, really. I consider myself a solution architect. I've been working as a solution architect for probably the best part of 20 years now, across enterprise, across public sector, etc. And so I do consider myself a solution architect. That said, I've been working in the cloud adoption and cloud migration space for quite a bit, long before I started working for Microsoft, which was about 3 years ago. I'm involved with the Cloud Compute Work Group, the Irish Internet Association, and I'm really interested in cloud adoption. What makes people move their stuff to the cloud? What makes people adopt cloud technology? So I suppose in that sense I am a bit of an evangelist. And we've actually, as part of that group, we've published an NSAI standard of cloud adoption called Swift 10. So something to look at if you're thinking about cloud and cloud migration. So in that sense, I am a bit of an evangelist, I guess. And I like to think about these things, and some of the statements and some of the kind of feedback that we're getting from customers this year, actually, maybe latter half of 2015, but I think this year we've seen a bit of a tipping point. And I pulled together some of these kind of statements from our esteemed thought leaders in the area. And I like this one, actually. We talked from Art earlier on, talked about private and hybrid and public, and keep using those terms. I like this one because I've noticed that we've started to stop saying public cloud. Not we, Microsoft, actually, our customers. People have started to stop saying public cloud. It's not, we're still saying it, obviously, but they've started the process. For example, people don't really build Exchange clusters anymore. They go Office 365. They're used to accessing their email via the cloud. Okay, they're used to that now. So they don't call Office 365 public cloud anymore. So that's the first kind of step towards that move away from talking about it as public cloud, is that kind of acceptance that that's how we do business now, right? That's how we access IT resources. So let's stop calling it public cloud. Because public cloud actually has, connotations that it's an insecure place to put stuff, okay? The word public is starting to be dropped. It'll take a little while. IDC say it'll take another 4 years. Another interesting one, I think, especially when I go back to, and again, I've been involved with cloud computing working groups for probably 8 years now, and definitely 100%, as we speak to SMB, enterprise, ISVs, born in the cloud, but any company using cloud, or even thinking about it, security is the top concern, has been the top concern. And again, this year, that's changed. It's based on the right to get a kind of, State of the Cloud report of 2016, that's dropped to second place. It's still very, very much high on people's list of priorities. But it's moved to second place, and what's taken first place is kind of skills, operational stuff that James talked about earlier on. How do we now actually do it and do it properly? Like, what are the best practices around this stuff? So that's a kind of an evolution away from resisting it and actually taking it on board and accepting it. So I think that's an interesting tipping point that we've seen. And that report was based primarily on enterprise, larger enterprises, so 1,000 plus employees. So that's an interesting kind of tipping point, I think, that's happening this year. But we see, and it was actually, this is an interesting one. We surveyed our customers. Okay, and we went back and we asked them, so pre-adoption, so before you were in the cloud, before you were using the cloud, and the RightScale report says that 89% of enterprises are now using cloud. Not doesn't mean that they're all in the public cloud. I love that word hybrid that James and Art used earlier on. It's all about hybrid, because we're not necessarily going to ask anybody to remove all of their applications in the cloud or infrastructure. But pre-adoption, our customers, and we asked Comscore to go and survey all of these enterprises, 60% cited data security as the primary concern for adopting cloud. Okay? And data control, data privacy, Art alluded to that earlier on, and I'll touch on it again later on. So these are customers, remember, who did adopt cloud. And then after that, this is an interesting one. This again is part of that tipping point. Not only did they say, well, actually, we realized we didn't need to worry about security so much, they actually found that it was more secure. Okay? And that's an interesting kind of thing to talk about and discuss. How is it that it can be more secure? Like this public cloud thing, how can that be more secure? And that's what I'd like to talk to you a little bit about today. And that's the investments that we're making in the area of security are pretty significant, okay? We're spending more money on securing Azure than some security companies actually generate revenue. Okay? So it's a significant investment that we're making to secure the platform. And a significant investment we're making to work with partners like Red Hat to make sure that when you deploy your applications that they're secure as well. So there's two sides of that story that I'd like to bring you through. And what I'd also say is, really importantly, I'm not here to tell you just move your stuff into the cloud and be glad, right? That's not what I'm here to say. It's not a case of stick it in there and it's secure by default. Certainly not the case. In fact, the types of workloads that we see our customers using in the cloud are presenting some new challenges, okay? Like mobility, even from a basic perspective, mobility presents a huge challenge for organizations in the security space. Securing mobile devices, securing the transfer of data, managing those devices, etc., etc. If we bring that into the IoT space, okay, and I'm doing a lot of work with companies in IoT where they're looking at digital transformation and how they can draw more data, more insight from more things. Okay, it's not just a buzzword there. They're actually doing that, right? But when you do that, you essentially increase the surface area of attack for your organization. Okay? So it's not that the technology you're using is particularly insecure, okay? But you do increase the surface area of attack. And when you do that, and mobility has done that, and IoT is certainly going to do that. So I think over the next few years, as we talk more and more about IoT, we'll hear this security conversation come up over and over again, okay? So we increase the security area of attack. The other thing that's happening, and James alluded to that, and by the way, just on that, isn't it amazing that somebody talking about infrastructure can't do it without talking about developers? That's another tipping point, okay? We just can't do that anymore. We cannot talk about infrastructure without talking about developers and without talking about development technology and DevOps, right? Again, not buzzwords. It only becomes a buzzword because it's sticky, because people are doing it, okay? So DevOps is real. How do I orchestrate the infrastructure that I need in order to run my application? Without IT kind of saying, well, no, you can only have that amount of hardware, you can only have that much processing power. The types of applications that companies are building, and I'm talking about banks, I'm talking about online e-commerce, big, large online e-commerce companies like ourselves, even the services that we offer, okay? In order to get our applications into a production environment and to scale, we need to control the infrastructure. It's just not good enough to say, there's a couple of boxes, knock yourself out. So DevOps is real, it's happening, and it's key. A lot of customers that we're talking to are looking at DevOps so that they can scale, so they can burst, okay, for peaks in demand and so on. So DevOps is real. So that's interesting as well, because that means we're now allowing our developers to spin up new infrastructure. That's crazy, right, from a security point of view. Isn't it? No one agrees with me, so it's not crazy. But it is crazy. It's crazy that we're going to let these guys who live in scripts and code spin up infrastructure. How do they know about the secured infrastructure? We harden the images, and we deploy the images, and you use those images. But guess what? That day is gone. Back to that waterfall stuff. It doesn't allow us developers to get our applications out and get our new features out quick enough. And that's the business driving that type of change. So this DevOps stuff raises some security concerns as well. And finally, as much as we may not want to admit it, the stuff that we do on premise may not be that secure to start with. Okay? And what we see actually is when people move stuff into the cloud, we start to open up some little cans of worms. Okay? There are little things that we haven't thought about on premise that we now need to think about because we're in a multi-tenant environment. Okay, and security is one of those. There are other things like operational stuff. Okay, how do we actually manage the patching of these VMs? Because it used to be here, we could control that a lot better. And security is one of those things. So if we have security challenges on premise, because we've got an application that's hidden away in a corner of our network, and it's secure because no one actually knows it's there, then when we move that into the cloud, we actually have to start thinking about security a little bit. So again, just to reiterate that, I don't really want to say to you, just put all your stuff in the Azure, it'll all be secure by default. We have to start to think about some of these kind of concerns. So when we set about building our security framework for Azure, you notice, by the way, I say Azure, other people say Azure, sometimes I flip, and that's just because the Americans are influencing me. But I'm still going to stick with Azure for now. When we build our security framework and platform, and we then extend that out to you so that you can use that for your applications, we need to take all of these things into account. We need to understand these very, very well, okay? So that you can move those applications into Azure, and that you can move them into Azure and get the kind of enterprise-grade security that you expect. Here's a couple of figures. We all like figures. This is the kind of the first two, kind of the amount of money, okay? So the negative impact due to security breaches in 2015, okay? $3 trillion of market value destroyed. You know, another part of my job is advising startups on technology. And one of the kind of key focus areas for me is security, because, and I work myself in a startup environment as a CTO, and we were processing payments and financial records and so on, so we had to do a lot of PCI compliance and all that sort of stuff. And the reality is, if we don't do that right, business is over, right? It's shut down time. It's Visa and MasterCard saying, we're not going to process your payments because we've found that there's been fraudulent activity that's in some way connected with your network. You know, we haven't even proven it yet. You're just guilty by default and we're shutting it down. That's happened, okay? And I've seen kind of startups fall into that trap, okay? And that's nothing to do with development, right? That's processes, thinking about security, embedding security into your processes and into your architecture and so on. So it does have a massive impact on business. But actually, what's the most startling figure there? It's the 229 days. That's the most startling figure for me. So we can build all the protection in the world that we want, but if it's going to take us nearly a bloody year to figure out we've been hacked, we're in the proverbial, right? We've got a problem. And that's actually where the kind of market value and the cost of business impact is from security breaches. It's not in the lack of protection. We have to assume breach. Okay, and I'll talk about assume breach a little bit more later on. We can't stand here and say, yep, rock solid, no one's ever going to get in, sort it. We can't do that. Same way as you can't say your car will never be stolen, right? You're okay now because you're on the south side. It's always a north side joke because I'm a north side. Okay? But you cannot say that. That's a big, bold statement that companies like Microsoft have to stand up and say, is that we cannot assume we will never be breached. But what we can do is we can make bloody sure we're not going to wait 229 days until we figure it out. Okay? And that's really important for you guys as well. So we'll talk a little bit about how we can, I suppose, extend that capability out to you when you deploy your applications into Azure. So when we build our security framework, we consider our customers' security posture in three ways. This is really important. So how do we protect your endpoints and how do we protect the back end? That's really important. How do we protect the transmission of data between the two? And I'll talk to you a little bit about what we do in the protection space. There's a ton of stuff online. I'll share with you some URLs, but I think Art mentioned the data center earlier on. There's nothing like going on a day. Has anybody been in the data center? Apart from employees. Okay, one person, right? So there's nothing like going on a data center tour to get a visibility into what we do in terms of security. Everything from tank modes around the data center to physical separation within the data center. And I do it huge misjustice by continuously referring to it as a data center. It's three mega data centers here in Dublin. And within those mega data centers, we have a physical isolation, and we call data centers within that, okay? So it's a massive, massive infrastructure deployment. We now have, I think, 33 live regions. Dublin is one of those regions. So think of the scale of that. That's incredible. Last Friday, we announced the UK. So if you're thinking about where your data sits, you can now put your stuff into our UK data centers, okay? So it's a massive investment in terms of protection. I'll talk to you a little bit more about that But again, we could spend all day on that, right? But it's certainly protection that you can leverage, okay? And you start to think, okay, now I can see why this stuff is actually more secure, not just secure. The other bit that we're going to help you with is detect and respond. Because that on its own is useless. Back to the 220 hours. How do we detect something is happening? And I'm going to put it to you that Microsoft are in the best place, the best position in the industry to help you with that. Okay? And I'll talk about the detail of that. And then finally, how do we respond? And that's kind of the easy bit once we've detected, right? So how do we respond? Okay, giving you the controls to do that. So that's our unique approach. We believe it's unique, okay? We secure the platform and then we don't just walk away. We give you the intelligence to understand when a breach has happened, if a breach has happened. Maybe there's some sort of activity that we think could lead to a breach. Something that you're doing in the cloud that could lead to a breach. These are all really important things for you to understand. And I'm going to talk to you about, and I'm going to show you in the hands-on lab later on how we do that. Okay? Some of the tools that we have in Azure that can help you with that intelligence. Really important stuff. Okay. And the final piece is partners, because we don't do everything. So, you know, there's the full stack that has to be managed. Okay. We can talk to you about the intelligence of what you've deployed in Azure. We can talk to you about some of the other intelligence pieces, which I'll talk about. But then when it gets down into, for example, Linux, who's best place, or Red Hat Linux, who's best place to do that? Those guys. Or if it's down into intrusion detection within the network, maybe it's F5 or Citrix Netscaler or someone like that that's better at doing that. So the partnership is really important. We talked about partnership earlier on with the Red Hat guys. I was on a call with a VP from Hortonworks, or the big data, the Hadoop guys. And what's really striking me, and I've spoken to some of the engineering team as well on this, is that it's not just the case of we support Red Hat on the platform. And I know James did a great job of explaining that earlier on. But it is that engineering piece. It's making it work really well. A lot of people talk about our support of Linux and how we love Linux nowadays and all that. There's a little bit of marketing going on. Of course we don't love Linux. Sorry, that was just a wake up. Of course we don't love Linux. Well, here's the reality. We've contributed a lot to Linux. In 2012, we were one of the top 5 contributors to Linux, right? So we do have a great open source story, but we probably just don't, or haven't traditionally told that to terribly well. So partnership is really key as well. So let's talk a little bit about how we secure the platform. James again mentioned earlier on about talking about developers, talk about software-defined storage. If you go into the data center actually in Dublin or in any of our regions, you'll notice that something's happening and it's software is eating hardware. Okay? The hardware is kind of going. You know, there's the kind of big void in the rack that we don't build for the big, you know, router, Cisco router at the end of it that costs a couple of $1 million. And all of that, you know, cleverness around routing network traffic is now actually being software defined. The storage layers are software defined. The hypervisor is all software defined. The infrastructure, the actual kit, we're building ourselves now as well. Okay, so this it's just all becoming about software. Now the challenge with that is it goes back to opening up those cans of worms and kind of new concerns and new things that we have to think about. The challenge with that is that we need to make sure security in our development life cycle is there right from the start. Okay? So it's not just the case, when we think of security, we tend to think, you know, jump straight to infrastructure, security controls and so on. Don't we? We tend to think about firewalls and IPs and ports and so on. But actually it needs to start back here. And this is something we have a long legacy of. Whatever you might think of Microsoft, whatever you guys might think of Microsoft, we've been at the forefront of secure software development for a long time. Okay? And embedding that into the psyche and to the mindset of every software engineer in the organization is key. So that everything they do when they write code, they're not just thinking of security, but also thinking about data protection. So if I'm processing this data, is this personally identifiable data that I'm processing, and that fundamentally informs architectural choices. So this makes sense, even though we've never, you know, it's kind of new, right? It still makes sense that software engineers are thinking about security, data protection, etc., right from the start. Makes absolute sense. Because, you know, there's probably 2 days worth of talk in just like infrastructure and security controls in terms of right from the data center to from the physical isolation. And nobody in the data center could point at any particular data center or rack or server and tell you what data is on it. No one can do that. Okay, it's just not possible. So kind of physical separation of data. Logical isolation between environment subscriptions, virtual machines, storage subscriptions, containers, etc. is really important. And then protecting all of that through intrusion detection. Okay? Learning what intrusions look like and applying that to the network layer within the data center is all really important. This stuff is all online, so I don't want to spend the whole day on it. DDoS is an important one as well, distributed denial of service. Okay, these are particular, DDoS attacks are particularly difficult to deal with. If anyone has ever been under a DDoS attack, you'll know that. It's not like a denial of service attack where it just brings your solution down. That's pretty easy for us to combat. But distributed is difficult. We've all heard about Xbox Live going down at Christmas 2 years ago. It's nearly impossible to say you're not vulnerable to DDoS. And you're the same. You need to think about that as well, of course. Okay? But the DDoS prevention that we have in there in terms of network flow protection, managing, making sure that, you know, signing up for an Azure account isn't a great way to launch a DDoS attack against you because I know your stuff is in Azure. Protecting all of that stuff is critical. Okay? We do a lot of that. And we start to get into areas where you can leverage that. Because we do that network flow protection, because we take DDoS attacks and support tickets on DDoS attacks as top priority, that's something that you can leverage. Because right now, if you come up against a DDoS attack, it's very difficult to mitigate that. It's very difficult for you to deal with that. So actually getting top priority on our support tickets from Microsoft, if you're running that on Azure, is pretty damn good, right? It means we're working together to try and mitigate that DDoS attack, which can take days. Yeah. If somebody really wants to get at your stuff, distributed denial of service attacks are really tough. Operational controls, prevent and assume breach. I'm going to talk about that on a separate slide, a little bit more detail. Just give you a little bit of an insight into how we operationalize security internally. How we make sure that your stuff is secure. Excuse me. Access policies, threat detection, and forensics are all pretty key to that. Compliance, I'm not going to go into too much detail because Art mentioned it earlier on, but it is really important, okay, that we allow independent auditors to come into our data center. I mentioned PCI earlier on, it's a classic, or HIPAA if you're in the health sector. Okay? So the kind of auditors come in, audit the data center as we roll out new data centers like we did in the UK over the weekend, and these certifications get rolled out. So it's a process that we go through rolling out data centers that you can leverage as well. We're a step ahead of the certifications, and that's why you'll notice when new certifications come out, we're always first to get them. So we actually take the bar that the independent certifications define, and we raise that bar. Okay, so when we look at ISO and SOC, and all of those certifications, PCI, we raise the bar. We look at the specifications and we say, right, let's go way, way beyond that. And let's embed that into the psyche of our engineers and so on. Okay? That means when those new certifications come out, like the recent data protection certifications, we're ahead of the curve and we get those first. You'll see that. If you look at the information that's out there, you'll see that we get those first and the others tend to follow. Prevent and assume breach. I think this is a kind of fascinating insight into how we do things internally within Microsoft. So we have this kind of concept of blue teams and red teams. I've got a little also known as URL there. If you're interested in this process, we've documented it so you can learn from it. Okay? But this really is the new world of how you try to deal with security in terms of DevOps and containers, the new infrastructure world we live in, the new way that developers and operations and infrastructure people have to work together. And this is the process we do. So we have this kind of blue team. The blue team are the engineering teams. So any team that says, right, we're going to build a new service on Azure. Okay, that's great. So you need to have your security development lifecycle, you need to have your physical security controls and your operational controls in place. And it's up to you to defend it. So think of the blue team as the defenders on the football pitch. Okay? Then we have a red team. Everybody hates the red team, okay? Everyone hates the red team. Vigorously shaking their head. We all love it. We all love to hate the red team. So what does the red team do? The red team is charged. They're like the attackers, okay? They're like the forwards, the strikers. They're charged with breaking everything the blue team do. And I'm not talking about your typical QA and test processes. I'm talking about from a security perspective. So we do things like a load bounty program. You've probably heard about that. That's internal, but it's also public. So if you find a security breach in any of our products, we'll actually pay you money for finding that. That's a really good approach, in fact, in terms of widening the net of possible breaches and understanding what's going on out there in the real world. We do war game exercises. So new engineering teams that come on board to build new services, it's kind of like a fire drill. Yeah, we sit, the red team sits down with them and says, right, this is what we're going to do, and you're going to have to react to it. And what that's done, actually, again, you'll get this insight if you read the document, what that's done is it's made us realize that it's not just about the engineering team, because when we get into the breach and the assumed breach mentality, we realize there's a legal aspect to this. We need to bring the legal people in. We need to bring the operational people in, and we need to bring the support people in. So how do we communicate with customers? And when do we communicate with customers? Is our top priority to communicate with customers, or is our top priority to deal with breaches? All of those decisions have to be made, okay? And what's happened is these war game exercises or fire drills have allowed us to really fine tune who are the right people, how do we do that, what's the process and what does it look like. So please do download that and read about it. Take a photo of the slide if you like. The final bit then is live site penetration testing. So after the war game exercises, the red team say, right, you're now on your own. We've been friendly up until now. Now consider us the enemy. And from then on, you are now under constant surveillance, constant intelligence, constant pen testing, constant site scanning, etc., to make sure vulnerability scanning, to make sure that you're keeping on top of the processes and so on. So, at all points in the development lifecycle, our engineers have to assume they're going to be breached. Hopefully, by our ethical hacking team, because that's what they are. Okay. So these are people that we've gone out to industry, converted from hackers to ethical hackers. Okay? It's a really interesting story and insight into how we do that internally. And I wanted to share that with you. Because I could have talked about the networking control and so on, that's all there, but I thought this was really interesting. The second piece, or the flip side of protection, is empowering you. Okay, this goes back to my points earlier on about the types of workloads people are running in the cloud, okay? Opening up new challenges. So it's important that we expose a lot of this stuff to you, give you the ability to control access, whether it's through multi-factor authentication or whether you want to integrate with your on-premise enterprise identity and Active Directory, giving you that kind of capability, allowing you to control your data and where that data sits. And as I mentioned earlier on, if you want to put your data and keep it in the UK, you can do that. If you want to keep it in Dublin, you can do that, and so on. Security Center, I'm going to talk about in a little while. Everything from encryption to networking, we're going to, in the hands-on lab, we're going to go through this stuff, okay? We're going to show you how to create a secure network environment within Azure. So if you want to stick around for that, please do. I'll show you Security Center as well, which looks at what you're doing all the time on a continuous basis and makes recommendations. So really powerful tools that empower you to be secure. Because Azure is different than Office 365. Office 365 is obviously a software as a service model, in which case we manage pretty much everything from a security point of view. Obviously there are best practices around passwords and stuff that we can enforce, multi-factor authentication, etc. But pretty much we manage the entire stack. Okay, so we can control and protect that. But Azure is different, because Azure we're allowing you to upload your own VM images if you want to. Notice that I flipped from Azure to Azure. We're allowing you to upload code. Okay, so it's a completely different world and opens up new challenges in terms of security. And it's of course, with all the protection in the world that we build into the platform, you could do something silly, okay? Inadvertently or intentionally. you could do something silly. So you could go maybe and spin up a Red Hat Linux VM and leave all the ports open, you know, and let people access it and do stuff. And of course, we'll monitor the network traffic, and of course, we'll shut that down if it gets to a certain level. That's the kind of flood protection that's in there. But ultimately, if you do that and you've got sensitive data or customer data in there, you're putting yourself at risk. So it's not good enough for us to just step back from that and say, well, that's your problem. We have to empower you not to do that, empower you to give you the tools to make sure you're deploying as best you can from a security perspective. And the last one I mentioned earlier on, the marketplace, and James mentioned it, but that is really important. So the Barracudas and the F5s, the Netscalers, all those ISVs, as we call them, all those companies, we've worked with them, got them through a certification program. That's really important. It's not just about running their stuff on our cloud, okay? So spin up a VM through the marketplace. It's that it's supported end-to-end and that it runs really well and runs based on the platform that's underneath it, understands the networking, understands the storage. And so on. So when we talk about protection, there are tons of controls in there that we use to protect the infrastructure, protect data centers and so on. And there are tons of controls in there that allow you to protect your deployments into Azure. But what about that 229 days, remember? Okay, so we've protected, but now can we detect? All right. The problem with detection is that there's so many different types of attacks. This is growing all the time. Hackers are coming up with new, clever ways to attack your business. We used to just talk about viruses. Remember viruses? And then, you know, companies like McAfee have to keep on top of those viruses and so on. It's exactly the same with security. You can't deploy something, you know, harden it anymore and then expect it to stay secure. Yeah, it's a continuous thing that you have to monitor. And it's a continuous thing that you have to gain intelligence around, well, what's a legitimate request and what's an illegitimate request? What's a DDoS attack and what's just great traffic, right? You know, so understanding the difference between those things is not easy. Because there's so many different types of accounts, denial of service, we've talked about, system updates, who's updating our system? Are we pulling down updates that are potentially got malware built into them? Device logins, how do we control those? Okay, where do they come from? If you normally log in from Ireland and all of a sudden you're logging in from somewhere else, is that an issue? Maybe it's not an issue, maybe it is an issue. So all of these things are difficult in terms of gathering intelligence. Right? And the type of workloads that people are using the cloud for, you absolutely need to have this intelligence. Because, like I said earlier on, because of the workloads, we're drastically increasing that surface area of attack on our business. Okay? And this is where we believe we're uniquely positioned. Because we're quite unique in this regard. Okay? 300 billion user authentications each month through Active Directory and Azure Active Directory. We kind of know what a brute force attack looks like. Okay? We've been defending ourselves against brute force attacks for a long time. So we kind of know what a brute force attack looks like. 1 billion Windows devices updated. So we understand the types of techniques hackers use to attack your operating systems. We understand that. We've gained intelligence around what that looks like. Okay? And how they attack, where they come from. The vulnerabilities are the areas within operating systems that are looking for vulnerabilities. We've got a huge amount of intelligence about that. 200 billion emails analyzed for spam. So we know what a phishing attack looks like, potentially. But this is a huge amount of intelligence. And the other piece of intelligence that we're gathering now over the last, whatever, seven years is networking attacks. What's going on within a data center? Who's trying to attack the data center, both from within and outside? What does an attack look like? What does irregular activity look like? All of this intelligence is really important if you're going to take that 229 days down to maybe a day less, even if you can, or even preempt the attack. See activity that preempts that attack. So I'm nearly done. I'd like to just, and we're going to look at Azure Security Center later on. Okay, but we've kind of got two products that we've built this advanced threat analytics that we talked about, I just mentioned, into. OMS, if you're interested in getting that intelligence across on-premise clouds, private clouds, across AWS even, across different hypervisors, across Azure. So if you're interested in getting that threat intelligence across a number of different environments, OMS security is a great option. We're going to look at just the Azure piece later on in the hands-on lab. So I'm going to show you Security Center, which is just part of Azure. And this is really where I think cloud has gone from providing infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, and all those have been boring bits, okay, to the trusted advisor piece. So how do we make sure that you're using this stuff as best as possible so that you're protected and that your customer data is protected? Because that's an important part of our story. If we're going to truly help you transform and use all of these new innovations and new technologies from DevOps to containers, etc., we're going to help you do that, then we need to make sure that you have access to the same level of security that we have. So these products are designed to give you that insight. Okay? Security Center is quite new, about 6 months now, I think, but we're continuously adding. And of course, as we make recommendations and people act on those recommendations, whatever those recommendations are, we gain more intelligence and we really start to learn. So this becomes your kind of personal assistant in terms of cloud and deployment. And I'll finish then by just very quickly, I want to say that the security piece is not on its own. So security itself is a broad topic that we can't cover in just 20 minutes or whatever, 35 minutes or whatever it is it takes. And I want you to understand that there's a lot more to it. Art definitely alluded to this earlier on. But privacy control is a really big concern, a really big issue. And again, I'd say, don't take my word for it, go kind of read the stuff that's out there. I'd say we're leading the way in that regard. Everything from the first provider to have the EU model clauses built into our contracts to the ISO certifications and so on. So privacy control is really key, and we recognize that it's important for us to help you look after your customers' data as well. Compliance, we've talked about. Transparency is another one, okay? So we're probably at the forefront in terms of what we publicly say about what happens. We're now seeing other large American corporates follow us, which is great. So again, it's showing that we set the example and lead in that regard. And then finally, security. So I'm going to leave you with this URL, another also known as Trust Our Cloud. Just have a look at that. If you have any questions around cloud adoption, particularly about Azure, of course, this gives you all the information and a lot more detail than I just talked about. You can get attestations of compliance from a PCI point of view. You can apply for your DAA document for HIPAA, etc., etc. You get all the information you need in terms of security and data privacy, etc., from there. And that's it from me. Thank you very much.